Hello and welcome to Exploring the Tragedy of Antony by Robert Garnier and done into English by Mary Sidney, or Mary Herbert, the Countess of Pembroke. We're currently producing a full cast audio production of this play as chosen by our wonderful patrons. You can choose future work by joining us on patreon.com/beyondshakespeare. You also get all of these episodes early. This exploration is based on a series of one-to-one conversations with readers as we try to get to grips with the play. It's fair to say that we get things wrong in a first read and we dive down roads which we will not take, but also we find things that are really interesting. In this episode, we're looking at Act 4, and we're off to the Roman camp. Caesar and his mate, Agrippa, followed by a different chorus to last time. Oh, it's quite a shock. This isn't a full exposition of the text. If you want a more considered look, come back in a few months for the spoilers episodes. First up, we look at Caesar and Agrippa, with irregular Alan Scott reading Agrippa, and I focus on Caesar. We then look at the messenger who comes in, Dercetus, read by Rob Meissen, and then variously look at the Roman chorus with Alan Scott again. I myself am Robert Crichton Still. Okay, we're now going to have a quick look then at Act 4. We're going to focus on Caesar and Agrippa. I've already looked at the messenger's interjections later on in the scene. So effectively this is a much shorter scene because we only do about 200 lines before we get interrupted by the messenger, who we can just sort of sum up relatively briefly. And then we have a sort of closing passage, as it were, before we the entrance of the army, the Roman soldiers, the chorus of turn up, and that's rather fun. So I'm reading Caesar, you're reading Agrippa, and unfortunately for you, Caesar opens with a massive speech. I think in your pagination it's a two-pager.
One and a half, certainly.
Yeah, it's not too bad, but obviously...
I mean, it's there's a similarity to the shape of this, isn't there, which is the major character who is expounding
speech
at length, and
exposition.
This one, Agrippa, almost seems to be there to
prompt,
to give him a space to breathe.
Yeah, so we're in Act 4. We've just come from the happy, cheerful Mark Antony camp. We're now going to the winner's enclosure for the first time, and see how that goes. You ever-living gods, which all things hold within the power of your celestial hands, by whom heat, cold, the thunder and the wind, the properties of interchanging months, their course and being have, which do set down of empires by your destined decree. I'm going to start with that again, because I've totally got the pacing that wrong. and the way the words flow. Ooh, yeah, he's quite different. Which is a good thing. That's suggesting that they're writing a character in different ways. They're not just doing verse. You ever-living gods, which all things hold within the power of your celestial hands, by whom heat, cold, the thunder and the wind, the properties of interchanging months, their course and being have, which do set down of empires by your destined decree, the force, age, time, and subject to no change, change all, reserving nothing in one state. You have advanced as high as thundering heaven the Romans' greatness by Bellona's might, mastering the world with fearful violence, making the world widow of liberty. Yet at this day the proud exalted Rome, despoiled, captived, at one man's will doth bend. Her empire mine, her life is in my hand. As monarch, I both world and Rome command. Do all, can all, forth my commandment cast, like thundering fire from one to other pole, equal to Jove, bestowing by my word haps and mishaps as fortune's king and lord. No town there is but up my image sets, but sacrifice to me doth daily make. Whether where Phoebus join this morning steeds, or where the night them weary entertains, or where the heat the Garamante doth scorch, or where the cold from Boreas' breath is blown, all Caesar do doth awe and honour bear, and crowned kings his very name doth fear. And crowned kings his very name doth fear. Yes, it's got to be in italic. And crowned kings his very name doth fear. Antony knows it well, for whom not one of all the princes all this earth do rule arms against me, for all redoubt the power which heavenly powers on earth have made me bear. Antony, he poor man, with fire inflamed, a woman's beauties kindled in his heart, rose against me, who longer could not bear my sister's wrong, he did so ill entreat, seeing her left, while that his lewd delights her husband with his Cleopatra took in Alexandria, where both nights and days their time they passed in naught but loves and plays. All Asia's forces into one he drew, and forth he set upon the azure waves 1,000 and 1,000 ships, which filled with soldiers, pikes with targets, arrows, darts, made Neptune quake, and all the watery troops of Glauces and Tritons lodged at Actium. But mighty gods, who still the force withstand, of him who causeless doth another wrong, in less than moment's space reduced to naught all that proud power by sea or land he brought.
Presumptuous pride of high and haughty sprite, voluptuous care of fond and foolish love, have justly wrought his rack, who thought he held, by overweening, fortune in his hand.
I'm just going to stop you there, because I think we should unpack the general mood of this opening, because it's so different.
Well, it's Caesar is triumphalist, I'm the bloke in charge.
It's not even just that he's triumphant, he's God.
Yes.
And he knows, you know, it's not even, there's no humility at all.
No, I mean, it's the ego has landed.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I am Alpha et Omega. And he just... And his rhythm's very different.
Yes.
I mean, his phrasing, it's all very controlled.
Yeah.
It's all very ordered. There's no false modesty in this man.
I mean, this one you've got to see as he's standing there with the toga.
Yeah, he's...
And going through the full suite of the declamatory...
Yeah, he's very... Who's he talking to? It's quite a weird speech in that sense.
Yeah.
Because it's not like he's talking to the audience or to the person in the room. It's sort of to both.
I almost think that you've got a... You could posit it as being... He's rehearsing.
Hmm.
A speech to be made to either the Senate or the mob in front of a trusted advisor.
Yeah, I think that's possibly a way we'd do it. I mean, I don't think that's what's happening. I think that's just saying we could interpolate.
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it.
To give it a motivation rather than just, hi, I'm great.
Yeah, one footnote, actually.
Yes, I saw you
might
scribbling.
Be worthy. Bellonus. Turns up several times, and I
shall we just look up who it is?
Who
there were a few.
What?
There were a few in here that I went in. I just sort of Garamante. I wasn't sure of
which you've got on here is Garamont, I think.
Yeah. It's. I've got an E on this one, so and it felt like it should be an E, accented. But I could be wrong. I genuinely don't know how it's pronounced, so I just sort of. And Glaus, or Glaus, whoever I said it. So let's look at Bellona first. Roman goddess of war.
Right, as in Bella.
Yeah,
yes.
That makes Bellum. Sense.
Yes, yes, but it turned up in Anthony's speeches earlier, and I didn't query it at the time, but it's worth unpacking
bit. There's a few of these references where it does actually genuinely help if you know who the hell they are. I mean, Phoebus, again, we're fine because it's
the sun,
and I think
Boreas is the west wind.
So we've had that in we've had him before.
Well,
many times. So the Garamante and I think it is pronounced that way. They're apparently a tribe of North Africa.
All right. Towards the bottom of that page on this one,
also this
you
was written
said
in the 16th century.
Yeah. And you put in Antony knows it well.
Yeah, I've got the Anthony.
The script as type doesn't have Anthony's
what
name.
What does it have? Just
knows it well.
Ah, I did notice there was an error there that in the thing, so that's good. Just make a... Yeah, just underline that knows as well. Make sure it's clear. And the Bill sees Triton's lodged to act him. I assume that there are tribes who are with... who.
Sorry, where are we next?
Towards the end of the speech. So Glorse was one of the Nereides in classical mythology.
Yeah, well, the
tribe. There must be an accent on that, surely. The Glorses.
Yeah, well, you've got it here as Glanks. Mm.
Glanks, have I?
Glanqueues.
Oh, Glankies. Glankules.
And it should be G L.
A, well, as it, I assume it's been lightly modernised in this edition. Glauce. One of the Nereides. So a marine nymph. And also the Tritons, obviously.
Yeah, which makes sense.
So it's all about acting.
It's the nymphs and the Tritons. The Tritons being the male equivalent.
So they've all...
Yeah, I mean, that's straightforward classical mythology, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's logical for Actium being a sea battle. So... anyway, you follow on the thread, and I obviously stopped you mid. We'll start that speech
fine.
Again. But it's like I'm not going to say you're toadying here, but it's like you're riding on the energy. Yeah, he's proud.
Yeah, I mean, it's also a very different verse form from what we've had before. And again, I think it's the victor's arrogance in some ways coming through with both of these.
Yeah.
Presumptuous pride of high and haughty sprite, voluptuous care of fond and foolish love, have justly wrought his rack, who thought he held by overweening fortune in his hand. Of us he made no count, but as to play, so fearless came our forces to assay, so sometimes fell to sons of Mother Earth, which crawled to heaven war on the god to make. Olymp and Pelion, Ossa on Olymp, Pindus on Officer, loading by degrees, that at hand strokes them with mighty clubs the might on mossy rocks the gods make tumble down, when mighty Jove with burning anger chased, disbrained with him Gyge and Briareus, planting his darts upon their bruised bones, for one no one thing the gods can less abide in deeds of men than arrogance and pride. And still the proud, which too much takes in hand, shall foulest fall where best he thinks to stand.
I mean, it must be knowing irony played here, isn't it? You know, the one thing the gods can less abide in deeds of men than arrogance and pride to the man who has just been making the most arrogant and proud speech of the play. So that must be a deliberate irony, I would have thought, being played. You've got Chased, haven't you? That's another... yes, you have. You've got Chased. I got Chafed, so I think I've accidentally modernised an F.
Yeah.
Because that makes more sense. And also, I think Arrogance and Pride. Have you got Then Arrogance or... Than. I think that's a Than. I think I've accidentally done that as well. It's good little thing.
No, it's
got a bit of...
It's a nice rabble-rousing one.
It's the irony of it that I really like. And, you know, is it played? Is he sort of saying that almost like... He's not saying, "Oi, Caesar, you're being a bit prideful." Is he letting that irony land? I
don't know. I think he's almost... He's also ramping it up.
Mm.
I mean, you've got these abbreviations, I think, in just above the chafe bit. Olymp on Pelion, Ossa on Olymp, which is Olympia on Pelion, Ossa on Olympus, Pindus on Ossa.
Yeah, it's you a know, thing it, of, yeah.
It's piling it on. Sorry, pun not intended. Well, pun definitely intended.
Yeah. Anyway, I think we're possibly making overwork of what is a relatively straightforward little sequence. So let us crack on. I will presumably take from the power of your speech and move everything forward. Write us some palace or some stately tower which overlooks the neighbour buildings round in scorning wise and to the stars upgrows, which in short time his own weight overthrows. What monstrous pride, nay, what impiety incensed him onward to the god's disgrace, when his two children, Cleopatra's brats, to Phoebe and her mother, he compared.
Sorry, Phoebe and her brother.
Sorry. But it's, I love that Cleopatra's brats, because it's not like Caesar has... this Caesar has... because everybody else seems to have... You know, Julius Caesar had children with Cleopatra. Mark Antony has. This Caesar hasn't, because he's the more straight-laced. So it's interesting the way that's spat, or feels like it should be spat. When his two children, Cleopatra's brats, to Phoebe and her brother, he compared Latona's race, causing them to be called the Sun and Moon. Is not this folly right? And is not this the gods to make his foes? And is not this himself to work his woes? But yes, he's and again, he's, yeah, we're all playing on this pride, his monstrous pride.
Yeah. Isn't he?
It's like they're actively... It's not, I think, necessarily that he was... It's like they... Yeah. I think the idea that they're testing out their own propaganda is quite fun. But, you know, I've, obviously, the other thing is maybe they're just in their tent afterwards just going, oh, we're one. Everything's great. And the reality... They're going to be faced with the reality of their winning, that, you know, Antony's going to be dead and it's all going to be a bit... And maybe that's the point of the scene, is that they start off really triumphant and full of pride, and we're going to actually, and then they're faced with the actual reality of Mark Antony's fall, and that. So maybe that's the dramatic thing that's happening here. I'm projecting because we haven't got there yet.
I can think of some modern political echoes of this.
Projecting before we got to it. So let's get. So anyway, I do my thing, you know, and I put a laugh in there. It seemed right, you know. He had the temerity to call them the Sun and Moon. After you.
In like proud sort, he caused his head to lease, the Jewish king Antigonus, to have his realm for balm that Cleopatra loved, as though on him he had some treason proved.
Lydia to her, and Syria he gave, Cyprus of gold, Arabia rich of smells, and to his children more, Sicilia, Parth, Medes, Armenia, Phoenicia. The king of kings proclaimed them to be by his own word as by a sound decree. Yes, I mangled some of that.
Decree, I think, rather than degree.
I've got degree. Make a note. Just make a note. I've got degree here.
The Jewish king Antigonus, is that right?
Antigonus, yes.
Right,
yes, that,
okay.
That rings a bell from somewhere.
I just wonder whether there's a typo there somewhere.
Oh, have you got just Antigonus?
A-T-I-G.
Ah, it should be Antigonus. There should be a bit of an in there. Antigonus. Again, there's probably a footnote on who that is precisely.
Well, then.
It rings a bell. But again, that's future Robert's problems. Much more just trying to figure out what the scene is doing rather than specific classical references.
No, but if we explore them and note them at this stage...
Well,
that's why
we're saying it out loud. We're just going, eh?
What?
Because, you know, its path is sort of annoying. Because is that a contraction, isn't it?
Which one?
Paths. They've got Medes or Medes.
Medes.
Or Medes.
Well, it's the Medes and the Persians.
Yeah, I'm just wondering about, with a line like that, where you put the stresses. That's the thing, is, you know, just because that's the modern, doesn't mean that's how we should say it. It's that problem I have with many of these things, of sometimes it just sounds weird to sound weird. Anyway, let us move forward. It's a straightforward thing, you know, he's claiming himself to be great.
What? Robbing his own country of her due, triumphed he not in Alexandria, of Artabasus, the Armenian king, who yielded on his perjured word to him?
Nay, never Rome more injuries received, since thou, O Romulus, by flights of birds, with happy hand the Roman walls did build, than Antony's fond loves to it have done. Not ever war more holy, nor more just, nor undertaken with more hard constraint than is this war, which were it not, our state within small time all dignity should lose. Though I lament, thou Sun, my witness art, and thou great Jove, that it so deadly proves that Roman blood should in such plenty flow, watering the fields and pastures where we go. What Carthage in old hatred obs. It's interesting, it's going, yes, but I still regret that so many people must die. It's not my fault, it's just necessary. You know, it's all Antony's fault. He's forcing me to kill people. What Carthage in old hatred obstinate? What Gaul still barking at our rising state? What rebel Samnite? What fierce Pyrrhus power? What cruel Mithridate? What cruel Mithridate? What path hath wrought such woe to Rome, whose commonwealth he had, had he been victor into Egypt brought?
Surely the gods, which have this city built, steadfast to stand as long as time endures, which keep the capital, of us take care, and care will take of those shall after come, have made you victor, and you might redress their honour grown by past mischiefs less.
So it's the thing, Caesar's moving on from the pride of Antony and almost laughing at it to actually getting quite angry about the situation. You know, what a pass these he's forced us down, and you're going, but the gods have made us victors, so it's fine. That seems to be your you know, keep it fun. The sealy man, when all the Greekish sea his fleet had hid in hope to shore, his fleet had hid in hope me sure to drown, me battle gave, whose fortune, where fortune in my stead, repulsing him his fortunes disarrayed, himself forces. God, sorry, I'm losing the plot. I'll start that one again. The sealy man, when all the Greekish sea his fleet had hid in hope me sure to drown, me battle gave, where fortune in my stead, repulsing him his forces disarrayed, himself took flight soon as his love he saw, all wan through fear, with full sails fly away. His men, though lost, whom none did now direct, with courage fought, fast grappled ship with ship, charging, resisting, as the oars would serve, with darts, with swords, with pikes, with fiery flames, so that the darkened night her starry veil upon the bloody sea had overspread, whilst yet they held, and hardly, hardly then, they fell to flying on the wavy plain, all full of soldiers, overwhelmed with waves. Yeah, throughout with cries, we're going into sort of post-traumatic stress disorder at the moment. The air throughout with cries and groans did sound. The sea did blush with blood, the neighbour shores groaned. So they with shipwrecks pestered were, and floating bodies left for pleasing food to birds and beasts and fishes of the sea. You know it well, Agrippa.
Meet it was. The Roman Empire so should ruled be, as heaven is ruled, which turning over us, all under things by his example turns. Now as of heaven, one only Lord we know, one only Lord should rule this earth below. When one self-power is common made to two, their duties they not nor suffer will nor do, in quarrel still, in hate, in fear, meanwhile that people all the smart do bear.
So yes, while, you know, there are two rulers, this conflict was inevitable, and you know, the people are the ones who get it in the neck. And we go from aria to recitative in the next sequence. So let's rattle through this, I think.
Well, you've got a five line.
I've got there's a couple of little breaks in it, but it's a very back and forthy, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, I think you're right.
So let's try and let that find the rhythm of it and let that go. Then to the end, none, while my days endure, seeking to raise himself may succours find. We must with blood mark this our victory, for just example to all memory. Murder we must, until not one we leave, which may hereafter us of rest bereave.
Mark it with murders? Who of that can like?
Murders must use who both assurance seek.
assurance call you enemies to make?
I make no such, but such a way I take.
Nothing so much as rigour doth displease.
Nothing so much doth make me live at ease.
What ease to him that is feared of is of all.
Feared to be and see his foes to fall.
Commonly fear doth breed and nourish hate.
Hate without power comes commonly too late.
A seated prince hath oft his death desired.
A feared. I got feared here, which makes...
Sorry, a feared prince.
Yeah.
Well, I was reading as typed.
Yeah, no. But it's also just interesting how that's ended up being. Maybe that is a... What have you got for the next line? You've got...
A prince not feared.
Yeah, so it must be...
Yeah. A feared prince hath oft his death desired.
A prince not feared hath oft his wrong conspired.
No guard so sure, no fort so strong should doth prove. No such defence as is the people's love.
Nought more unsure, more weak, more like the wind than people's favour still to change inclined.
Good God! What love do gracious prince men bear?
What honour to the prince that is severe?
Nought more divine than is benignity.
Benignity, I think that must be.
Benignity, yes, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, it's very fault. Weirdly spelt there, so that's, I think, isn't it?
Well, no.
It's just the capital B throws it a bit. Yeah, we'll take that out. Give me that one again.
Nought more divine than is benignity.
Nought like the gods as doth severity.
Gods all forgive.
On faults they pains do lay.
And give their goods.
Oft times they take away. Let's just briefly pause there because... Caesar's going, let's murder it, let's raise the city, pretty much, isn't it? He's saying, let's...
I'm not sure he's saying raise the city. I think he's basically saying let's get shot of Antony and all of his associates.
Until not one we leave.
I think they're talking about...
Because we're talking, meanwhile, the people all the smart do, and then to the end, none, while my...
Yeah, but I think it's more a question. It's almost, if you wanted to put it in a modern context, it's almost the Stalinist view of chop the head off.
No, I think you're right. I was getting carried away because it's the reason why I leapt to that conclusion was because we are literally a page or so away from the Roman soldiery talking about what they're going to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But I get the impression that the drift of this is...
It's Antony and his
immediate circle.
Yeah, he and every, yeah. Okay.
That's the way it reads to me, anyway.
Yeah. That seems reasonable. Let's see where it goes.
And that, I think, has some reference when we get to the next bit.
Well,
They wreak them not, O Caesar, at each time... that by our sins they are to wrath provoked. Neither must you, believe, I humbly pray, your victory with cruelty defile. The gods it gave, it must not be abused, but to the good of all men mildly used. And they be thanked, that having given you grace to reign alone and rule this earthly mass, they may henceforward hold it still in rest, or scattered power united in one breast.
But what is he that breathless comes so fast, approaching us and going in such haste?
He seems afraid, and under his arm I a bloody sword espy.
I long to understand what it may be.
He hither comes, it's best we stay and see.
So some of the worst, oh look, here come a messenger approaches dialogue. Oh, look, a wizard approaches, which is fine. It's useful for us because it, as audio, it's perfect.
Yeah.
Someone's approaching with a bloody sword. Fabulous. Okay, Dercetus, I'll just read in because there's a little back and forth.
Yeah, the trouble is he has dialogues with both.
Yeah, I know. I'll just read in this. it doesn't really matter. It's basically, woeful news I bring. That's basically it. That's all you need.
What sudden chance thee towards us hath brought?
A lamentable chance, O wrath of heavens, O gods too pitiless. What monstrous hap, says Caesar, what monstrous hap wilt thou recant? And he says, Anthony's dead. Over about six lines.
Shall I do this if we're going
to... Oh, no. I've already looked through the whole Dercetus sequence. So I You know, he basically just describes everything, and he's very sad. It's interesting with Caesar, because he's got this witness. How truthful is Caesar with that lamentation? So let's see where that goes. He obviously stops, basically Dirtus himself does a massive speech, and he gets a breath mark because Caesar pops in with poor hopeless man. At which point Dirtus goes, and then, has a quick swig of some whiskey, and then moves on with the rest of his...
Another 2.5 pages.
It's a massive speech, which for the audio, we will actually semi-act out some of the dialogue he reports so that it will be a bit more dynamic than just one long speech, because it's mean. But I think I will probably make Dirtus Lucilius. I will have a little look, but I think that... I just hate wasting an actor and only giving them one tiny thing to do.
Well, chunky old speech. But...
It's only in one scene, and it's sort of like he's sort of pointless as a character. He's just representative. Anyway, I don't know. Is he still in the room? Let's find out. Anyway, he finishes his long speech. Antony's been carried to his tomb. I brought you the news, and Caesar goes off on one. Oh, gods, what cruel hap! Poor Antony! Alas, thou hast this sword so long time borne against thy foe that in the end it should of thee, his lord, the cursed murderer, be. Oh, death, how I bewail thee! We, alas, so many wars have ended, brothers, friends, companions, cousins, equals in estate. And must it now to kill thee be my fate?
Why trouble yourself with that bootless grief? For Antony, why spend you tears in vain? Why darken you with dole your victory? Meseems yourself your glory do envy. Enter the town, give thanks unto the gods.
I cannot but this tearful chance lament, although not I, but his own pride the cause, and unchaste love of this Egyptian.
But best we sought into the tomb to get, lest she consume in this amazed case so much rich treasure, with which haply despair in death may make her feed the fire, suffering the flames her jewels to deface, you to defraud, her funeral to grace. Send then to her, and let some mean be used, with some device so hold her still alive, some fair large promises, and let them mark whither they may by some fine cunning sleight enter the tombs.
Oh, you are the proper soldier here, isn't it? You know, make sure we secure the booty.
Yeah.
And it's like, stop crying, stop being sad, you know. And it is a weird role reversal, because I think it is genuinely that Caesar is sort of lamenting the death of Antony. I played with the idea that it might have been politic in front of a witness to pretend to be grief-stricken. But you seem to be genuinely confused.
Yeah.
And then you're going... You were the one who was saying, let's not murder Antony and all his mates, but now he's dead, you're going, yeah, let's just make sure we
secure the goods.
Yeah, and the queen and all that stuff. You know, flames her jewels to deface. You don't want cracked sapphires and rubies, do you?
No.
And maybe you're just sort of shaking me awake into action. Let Proculeus, wasn't it? The extra E.
Yeah.
God. Let Proculeus go and feed with hope her soul disconsolate. Assure her so that we may wholly get into our hands her treasure and herself. For this of all things most I do desire, to keep her safe until our going hence, that by her presence beautified may be the glorious triumph Rome prepares for me. At which point... chorus of Roman soldiers start up.
Which we had some fun last time.
Exactly. And, you know, that on movement of doom.
One interesting point is where is the locus of the action? In other words, whereabouts are they?
They're outside of Alexandria.
Right.
The whole narrative of this is about besieging the city.
Fine.
You know, Antony's lost Actium, so the whole of those choruses in Act One and Two.
Antony is within Alexandria, but not with Cleopatra.
Yeah, until about now.
And and Caesar is just on outside the town.
And that, and so we've had the previous choruses have all been the people of Alexandria lamenting what's going to happen, and now this is the chorus of Roman soldiers moving in.
Okay, mate, this is what's going to happen to you.
The dynamism of the chorus in relation also to what's happening in the scenes is really, really well plotted. I think there's a real momentum, actually, even though these scenes are in many ways quite simple.
Mm.
Dramaturgically, you know, there isn't that much going on between Agrippa and Caesar. The whole point of this scene is simply to hear the long message speech. It's to contrast the winners, the mood of the winners at that beginning. Mm. You know, that pride is so important because everybody else had pride and were despairing. These are people enjoying pride and scorning the people that they've beaten. The grief seems to be genuine. I don't think there's irony intended there.
I think there's opportunism. I think there is a reverse ferret there with.
Oh, it's definitely emotional
with
reverse with
Caesar basically going from.
Oh yeah,
you know, the long basically we're going to get rid of him.
We're just going to murder everybody.
And then you hear that somebody that he's beaten you to it, and suddenly, you know, he should have died hereafter.
Mm.
You know, it's no good him taking his own life. We wanted to have done it.
I'm not sure that's what he's saying. I think it's just simply he is genuinely, you know, they've lost a great man. I don't see any cynicism in what I thought before we started. That's where it's going, but it seems genuine.
Mm.
And I think, you know, there are limits to what we can project onto this. I think you could probably play it that way. I don't think the text is actually saying that.
No, and I think you've also got another one with resonance down the ages of we've won, now what do we do with it?
Exactly. Yes. Yes, the duration is the hardest. It's easy to win the war. It's the duration that's hard.
Winning the peace is somewhat more difficult.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in a sense, it's the thing. Caesar, in many ways, he fudges the peace royally because he doesn't get Antony and he doesn't get Cleopatra either. And he tries to get Cleopatra and his messengers fail miserably. You don't see that in this particular narrative because it's just simply now Act 5 is quite quick. Quite a brief 200 lines of "and now we die." So it's a good half the length of that scene. It's almost half the length of that scene.
Well, this is why I raised the query with you when I first saw the script that Act 5
has no chorus at the end. Yes.
Has no chorus at the end. It just seems to.
She dies.
Peter out.
I don't know if it does. I mean, I haven't done any of the Cleopatra scenes yet. They're the only part of the play, apart from Antony's opening, that I haven't as of yet touched on. We've done everything else now so far. I think it's building to Cleopatra's death. I mean, I think it's as simple as that. Mm. And I think it's probably quite successful. She says goodbye to her children. It's a hard scene. And I think there is no function for the chorus anymore. I just don't know what they'd say apart from "this is sad, isn't it sad?"
We are dying, Egypt dying.
Yeah. So the more work we do on this, I mean, yes, it is overlong in places. I still don't know how I'm going to record it. But that's a separate problem. You know, I know what it's doing dramatically, and I think that's what's nice about doing this as a process. Is that before I'm going into even rehearsing it with the actors, I'm going, what the hell is actually happening in a more dynamic way? Or more importantly, what could happen? So that was Caesar and Agrippa. Now over to The Interrupting Messenger, read by Rob Meissen. Dercetus? Dercetus sounds more likely, doesn't it? Seems like
a lot of it.
There is. It's a long speech, but it's a really,
it is a long
really
speech,
good speech.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It's mostly a speech. Occasionally people interject. Basically, you're coming with the news that Mark Antony is almost steadied. So, you basically do the narrative of what happens to Mark Antony, mm-hmm. and it is a really nice sort of Senecan speech of...
Woe is me.
Yeah, so you stagger on as the messenger. So it's like they've been talking about you, you know. I long to understand what may have happened. He hither comes. It's best we stay and seize. And that leads into your first thing.
What good God, that line.
What good God,
yeah,
now.
So that's this the top is the of the thing. Page.
You're shell-shocked, probably covered in blood. You've seen the terrible thing happen.
What good God, now my voice will reinforce that... Tell I may to rocks and hills and woods, to waves of sea which dash upon the shore, to earth, to heaven, the woeful news I bring.
What sudden chance thee towards us hath brought?
A lamentable chance. A wrath of heavens, a gods too pitiless.
What monstrous hap wilt thou recount?
Alas, too hard mishap. When I but dream of what mine eyes beheld, my heart doth freeze, my limbs do quivering white quake. I senseless stand, my breast with tempest tossed, killed in my throat, my words ere fully born. Dead. Dead he is. Be sure of what I say, this murdering?
Yeah, you can go with murder or murder.
Yeah. Dead. Dead he is. Be sure of what I say, this murthering sword hath made the man away.
Alas, my heart doth cleave, pity me racks, my breast doth pant to hear this doleful tale. Is Antony then dead? To death, alas. I am the cause, despair him so compelled, but soldier of his death the manner show, and how he did this living light forego.
When Antony, no hope remaining, saw how war he might, when Antony, no hope remaining, saw how war he might, or how agreement make, saw him betrayed by all his men of war in every fight, as well by sea as land, that not content to yield them to their foes, they also came against himself to fight. Alone in court he gan?
Yeah.
Alone in court he gan himself torment, accuse the queen himself of her lament, called her untrue and traitress, as who sought to yield him up she could no more defend, that in the harms which for her sake he bare, as in his blissful state she might not share. But she again, who much his fury feared, gat to the tomb's dark horror's dwelling place, made lock the door and pull the hearses down. Then fell she wretched with herself to fight. 1,000 plaints, 1,000 sobs she cast from her weak breast, which to the bones was torn. A woman her the most unhappy called, who by her love, her woeful love, had lost her realm, her life, and more the love of him, who while he was all her woe support.
Just gonna pause there while you turn the page.
Yeah, strange.
Yes, it is interesting that it is, when talking of her, it's all about her life only has meaning in relation to him. Which is sort of depressing. It's that sort of, it doesn't really hold up to a feminist critique.
Especially considering she killed everybody in sight, including half her own family, didn't she?
Yeah, but they all did. Yeah, I mean, that was
part of the course, wasn't it? Yeah.
Well, you know, it's family tradition.
Family is family.
That's what you do. That's what you do. Okay, finish this little speechette. It basically continues. Basically, Caesar's interjection at the moment is almost
poor, hopeless man.
It's basically just to give you a chance to breathe.
Yeah. But that she faultless was, she did invoke for witness heaven. Blimey. But that she faultless was, she did invoke, is that it?
Yeah.
That she faultless was, she did invoke for witness heaven, the air, the earth, the sea, then sent him word she was.
The air, the earth.
It's my fault.
But it's that thing, you know, this is saying, you're relating what she says.
Yeah.
you know, I am faultless. I invoke
but that she faultless.
And the thing is, I might for the final version of this, especially when we get to proper quotes later on, actually invoke, you know, semi-stage that.
Yes.
So that you're, what you're relating, echoey voice yes. from the past.
Yes.
Bleeds into the edit.
Bleeds in. But that she faultless was, she did invoke for witness. But that she faultless was, she did invoke for witness heaven and air and earth and sea, then sent him word. She was no more alive, but lay enclosed dead within her tomb. This he believed, and fell to sigh and groan and crossed his arms, then thus began to moan.
Poor hopeless man. Deep breath.
What dost thou more attend? What dost thou more attend? Ah, Anthony, why dost thou death defer?
Ah, so that third thing, yeah, that first line is to Caesar. It's basically, are you listening?
What dost thou more attend? Sorry, I can't really see how that works.
Yeah, I think as you know. What it could be, what dost thou more attend? I think that's how it works.
Yeah.
It's too, you know, and then you quote what I assume that's, yeah, Mark Antony's line. So he's talking about himself in the third person, which is always what great people do.
Yeah. What dost thou more attend? Ah, Antony, why dost thou death defer? Since fortune thy professed enemy hath made to die, who only made thee live? Soon as with sighs he had these words up closed. Sorry, soon as with sighs he had these words up closed, his armour he unlaced and cast it off. Then all this
unlaced.
Unlaced.
How's it spelled there?
Unlaced.
Oh, right. Well, I suppose unlaced.
Yes.
Yeah, I unlaced my corset.
Yes. It actually might work, yeah. His armour he unlaced. His armour he unlaced and cast it off. Yeah, well, it cast it off, yeah, it makes sense, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, even unlaced, yeah. I think, to be fair, I think we'll just make it the modern word.
Yeah.
Or the modern sounding of the word. I think willful obscurity is not what we're about.
Soon as with sighs he had these words up closed, his armour he unlaced and cast it off, and then all disarmed he thus again did say, my queen, my heart, the grief that now I feel is not that I, your eyes, my son do lose?
Lose.
Yeah. Yeah. My son do lose, for soon again one tomb shall us conjoin. I grieve, whom men so valorous did deem, should now then you of lesser valour seem.
Bit of self-pity there from Mark. Yeah. Lovely, yeah. Lovely, lovely.
So said. For with he Eros to him called, Eros his man, summoned him on his faith to kill him at his need. He took the sword and at that instant stabbed there with his breast and ending life dead before his feet. That's a hell of a line. Ended his life, fell dead before his feet.
And it also isn't very clear what it means.
No.
It doesn't really say, because we've got a lot of he... his.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite get across that it's Eros killing himself.
That's where I'm confused at, Mark.
Yeah, Eros is stabbing himself. He's not killing Mark Antony. So that, as a line, is not very effective.
No.
I thought it wasn't very effective when I looked at it the other day in prep for this.
Yeah.
I thought there's an element of confusionness possible there. But then if we semi-stage this...
Yeah.
In the sense that I've got other voices. Then, there'll be a voice for Eros who's not in
yes.
the play.
Yeah.
Probably me. I tend to be the random
yeah.
voices.
Yeah. I do like the next line as well. Yes. Oh, Eros, thanks, quoth Antony, for this most noble act.
Yeah.
Oh, Eros, thanks, quoth Antony, for this most noble act, who powerless me to kill on thee hath done what I on me should do.
If only as a late explanation of what's happened there.
Yes. Of speaking thus, he scarce had made an end and taken up the bloody sword from ground, but he his body pierced. It's pierced, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Because there's an S in there. For he his body pierced, and of red blood a gushing fountain all the chamber filled. Oh, God. He staggered at the blow.
Very Quentin Tarantino, isn't
it? It is very, yes. But he's not dead because he's going to stagger.
Well, that's
he's
going to
stagger
Quentin,
now.
It's Reservoir Dogs. Yeah. He's lying there in a pool of his blood. Yeah.
He staggered at the blow. His face grew pale, and on a couch, all feeble, down he fell. Okay, wonderful, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. He staggered at the blow. His face grew pale, and on a couch, all feeble, down he fell, sounding with anguish.
No, it should be swooning.
Oh, swooning. Oh.
How's it spelt there?
Sounding.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Swooning with anguish, deadly cold him took, as if this soul had then his lodgings left. But he revived!
No, this isn't funny, okay? Stop.
But he revived!
This is the tragic, sad story of the noblest of romans, okay?
This is a touch of the John Waynes, this is.
Well, it's also true. I mean, this the is the problem. It's not so strange as true.
It's got a touch of the Carry On Cleos about this.
Yes, that's what we were looking
for. Trying
to avoid. Trying to avoid that.
I love the bit, all his soul that had then his lodgings left, but he revived, and marking all our eyes bathed in tears, and how our breasts we beat for pity, anguish, and for bitter grief to see him plunged.
You got plonged.
Plonged.
Oh dear, the spelling isn't helping us taking this seriously, is it?
It's a plung. It's a third plung from the left.
I have seen him plunged in extreme wretchedness. Oh dear.
Oh, a quick plung. Ah, mean.
Your plunker.
For pity, anguish, and for bitter grief to see him plunged in extreme wretchedness, he prayed us all to haste his lingering death. But no man willing, each himself withdrew. Then fell he new to cry and vex himself unto a man from Cleopatra. Then fell he new to cry and vex himself until a man from Cleopatra came, who said from her he had commandment to bring him to her to the monument. To bring him to her to the monument.
She's at the monument.
She's at the monument, yeah.
To
bring him to her. But he won't be at the monument, doesn't it?
It makes sense. It's almost the basic problem of when you break down historical fact into events, it all sort of falls apart,
yeah.
A bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You're going, and then what happened?
Yeah.
Because this is a story, as narrative is actually really sort of plonky and then this happened. So it's the task is to make this, you are grief stricken.
Yeah.
You couldn't kill him. You were there, but
you couldn't
had the sword.
It. Yeah.
And you couldn't do it.
Yeah. And then suddenly a man comes from Cleopatra.
But I think that's where a pause and a slowness and a collecting yourself, even though it's the middle of a sentence, that's what one has to do. Because I think we have to head for the emotion.
Yeah.
It's all about the emotion here.
No man willing, each himself withdrew. Then fell he new to cry and vex himself until a man from Cleopatra came, who said from her to he... Who said from her he had commandment to bring him to her, to the monument. The poor soul at these words, even wrapped with joy, knowing she lived, prayed us him to convey unto his lady. Then upon our arms we bare him to the tomb, but entered not. For she so feared captive to be made, that she should to Rome in triumph go, kept close the gate, but from a window high cast down a cord wherein he was impact.
Yep.
Cast down a cord wherein he was impact.
He was impact.
Yeah. Then by her women's help, the cord she raised. The cord that should be, shouldn't it?
No, it's corpse. It's,
the corpse.
So go with cause is probably.
The cause she raised. Oh, yeah. Then by her women's help, the cause she raised. And by strong arms into her window drew. We got Rapunzel there, haven't we? So pitiful a sight was never seen, little and little Antony was pulled, now breathing death. His beard was all unkempt, his face and breast all bathed in his blood, so hideous yet, and dyed as he was, his eyes half closed upon the queen he cast, held up his hand and hope.
And help himself help. To rise. I mean, hope we might use.
Oh, you're going to leave it there?
We might.
Yeah. His eyes half closed upon the queen he cast, held up his hand, and help himself to raise, but still with weakness back his body fell, The miserable lady with moist eyes, with hair which careless on her forehead hung, with breast which bloodily benumbed.
So she's been beating her breasts.
Yeah. It's just a hell of a lot of ease in there.
There's an awful lot of breast beating going on.
Yes.
Which is a thing.
Yes. With breast which blows with bloodily benumbed.
Yes, you're going to work on that one.
Yeah. It's a get your tongue around that line, isn't it?
Do it slowly.
With breast which blows had bloodily benumbed, with stooping head and body downward bent, enlaced her to the cord, and with all force this life dead man courageously upraised. This life dead man.
That's yeah, a dead of life.
That's a nice little phrase, that,
it is,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
last of Cobra, with all force his life dead man courageously upraised. The blood with pain into her face did flow, her sinews stiff, herself did breathless grow. The people which beneath in flock beheld assisted her with gesture, speech, desire, cried and encouraged her, and in their soulless did sweat
souls.
In their souls.
Souls. Souls. I don't know why we got the soul there, so I apologise for that, but I think that's my error in trying to update the spelling. Go from the people.
The people which beneath in flocks beheld assisted her with gesture, speech, desire, cried and encouraged her, and with their souls did sweat and labour no whit less than she, who never tired in labour, held so long, helped by her women and her constant heart, that Antony was drawn into the tomb, and there, I think, of dead augments the sum.
Because, of course, you know no more.
No.
And it's like the crowd are going, bring your love to you,
yeah.
Bring him up,
yeah.
You know, because, you know, he's a dead weight.
I'm saying he's still got another page to go, this, has he?
Well, it's not that much longer now.
The city all to tears and sighs is turned, to plaints. Yeah, to plaints and outcries horrible to hear. Men, women, children, hoary-headed age, do all pell-mell in house and street lament, scratching their faces, tearing of their hair, wringing their hands and martyring their breasts, extreme their dole. What's that mean?
It should keep going. Extreme their dole and greater misery in second towns can hardly ever be. Is there an error in punctuation there?
Is there anything after breasts?
From scratching their hands.
Oh, I see.
Down to hardly ever be.
Yeah. Scratching
just,
their faces,
just
tearing their
going.
Hair, wringing their hands and marching their breasts, extreme their dole and greater misery in sacked towns can hardly ever be.
They're really good at being sad.
Yeah,
about
they are. They
being
really can.
Doomed.
Yeah.
This really does feed into that earlier speech
it
so
does.
Well, actually.
Yeah.
And now I'm thinking back to that earlier speech because it's sandwiched between two chorus scenes. Maybe the chorus never leaves.
Mm-hmm. They are the
actually it's a unit of action in of its own right.
Yeah. They are the recipients of
the speeches. Yeah.
Well, the recipients of the first speech, they are the
yeah,
the actors of this speech,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, because hang on, let me just we're going on a tangent to an earlier bit because they're all Egyptians, those choruses there, and then we have the later chorus, which I think is supposed to be Roman soldiery from the end of Act 3, so the final chorus is different people. So I think the ever-present chorus of Egyptians is really important. They are technically gone at this point in the play.
Yeah.
but you are reporting their presence.
Mm-hmm.
That structurally, I think, is very clever.
Mm-hmm.
Even within the relatively constrained nature of this dramaturgy, relatively small cast, relatively contained scenes with lots of long speeches.
Yeah.
So let's just do this final. Awe inspired at the
Sectarian
great.
Can hardly be. Not if the fires had scaled the highest towers, that all things were of force and murderful.
You can go with murder.
Yeah. Not if the fire had scalded. I'm assuming that's for you.
Yeah.
Not if the fires had scalded the highest towers, that all things were of force and murderful. That in the streets the blood in rivers streamed, the son his sire sawn in his bosom slain, the sire his son, the husband reft of breath in his wife's arms, who furious runs to death. Now my breast wounded with their piteous plaints, I left their town and took with me this sword, which I took up at what time Antony was from his chamber carried to the tomb, and brought it to you to make his death more plain, and that thereby my words may credit gain.
And you don't say anything
another word.
It's a big set piece speech.
It is, isn't it?
It's a massive.
Yeah, and it's one
thing.
With. It's got to be big.
I don't know if it does.
In places it has to be, because you're exalting
yeah, but,
Antony,
you know,
but you're
it's
still...
It's a question of, you know, it's private grief as well.
Yeah, it's one of those that can really go up and down, can't
it? Yeah, I think, unlike quite a few of the other plays we've done, we need to think about this from the character's point of view first. What we've done a lot of is ask, what does the play want?
What does the
playwright do?
True.
And we've been going from very much an outside... in kind of way. With this play, I'm thinking that actually we need to find the character and the man and his emotional state first,
mm-hmm.
and then look at the rhetoric and the devices of this play, of this speech, you know. And because this is one which, you know, we're definitely going to record with you,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I might still have you being... Looking back at Philostratus, I'm almost thinking he's going to be the chorus leader now.
Yeah.
So that
see it like
actually
that, can't
there's a category error in the way the script is laid out. Because it says that Act 2 starts with his speech. I don't think it does. I think his speech is in the middle of two chorus speeches. And the end of the two chorus speeches, that's the end of Act 1. I think that's all...
Yeah.
flows into each
yeah.
other, and that actually maybe there's overlap. I won't know. I'm actually tomorrow. I've got someone who's we're exclusively looking at the chorus.
Yeah.
So I'll be able to overlap.
Yeah.
These two sessions to make a decision about how actually this is going to be put together, because if I for the final version trim those chorus and that speech down a little. And turn them into an overlapping
yes.
thing, I think that would be quite dynamic and exciting. And it makes Mark Antony's opening speech at the top of the play almost a prologue.
Yeah.
But then I don't know how that speech works, that's something which Mr. McCabe and I will look at in the future. When we get that together. Any additional thoughts on this messenger? Any... You know, he's one of the people there. He's an active participant. He's, you know,
very
one
much.
Of, he's one of Antony's men.
Yeah.
Not, you know,
yeah.
They call him a messenger, but he's not.
I think he's going to be somebody who's pretty close to Antony, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's not just one of the one of the minions.
You know,
he's going to be somebody who's.
He's a battle-hardened soldier.
Yeah.
And in that sense, the fact that he won't kill him is
almost a close friend.
Yeah. And it's that sentimentality of soldiery is that you can be ruthless, cold-blooded murderers, and yet you get ridiculously sentimental about honour and these
much.
Things, and that you can't kill Mark Antony because
no.
he's so great,
no.
Which is really weird.
I put him out of his misery.
Yeah, I have this real problem with honour in a lot of drama from the sort of pre-modern age. You get it in Spanish drama as well, where you just... I just can't relate to any of these people because they're obviously just arses. They're just doing stupid things based on a code of honour which is just written on the back of an envelope and just daft. And I same problem here, just going,
yeah.
Oh, get over yourself.
But also as well, if
actually, when that is a phrase that kills all drama, basically. Any play.
Yeah.
If you just say that, you just yeah. sort of go... Oh,
get a life.
Get a sense of proportion.
Yeah, get a life.
Though, actually, to be fair, in a lot of this, you know, you're going to die horribly. That's quite scary.
But half the problem is if he had killed Anthony, you wouldn't have had the last
the
second half of the speech.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't want to cut your part down, do you?
And finally back to Alan Scott with the chorus, following on in real time from reading the previous chorus sections, so we may refer to last time.
Bye-bye, Egyptians, because the story is now shifting.
It's the new masters.
So the scene preceding this is Caesar learning of the death of Antony and, of course, planning his next move in regards to Cleopatra. Following this chorus, Cleopatra's death, and then the play just ends.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the encroaching soldiers are moving in on her, and she has no friends around her anymore. Her friends are all gone. We just now have the soldiers and Caesar, and it's again, it's that sort of progression of flight from her. I mean, it's the thing in the whole play. Antony has two scenes, one of which is just one massive speech. Cleopatra only has two scenes. I mean, there are only, in a sense, five scenes in the entire play. But you could, well, six.
Yeah, I must admit, when I looked at the journal, I did query it with you when I was looking at it, that it did almost seem like Act 5 almost peters out, rather than... I was half expecting that there would be some sort of...
full stop at the end. No,
summation or full stop.
Well, the chorus hasn't functioned as narrative.
Traditional.
They're not narrative. They are there thematically. They're there to promote an emotion or a theme. They're not there to move the plot along. So actually, in a sense, not having an epilogue. There's no prologue either. I mean, the argument is a literary. It's a programme note. Anyway, Caesar has just heard about Antony's death, and he's all sad about that. But of course, he's still got to go and sort out Cleopatra. And that is the chorus of Roman soldiers. I'm not suggesting you do it like that. What tone? We go to a much more regular verse form that we've had earlier.
Yeah, it's an eight-line stanza.
Yeah. Let's see how it goes.
Shall ever civil bait, gnaw and devour our state, shall never we this blade our blood hath bloody made. Lay down, these arms down lay, as robes we wear alway, but as from age to age, so pass from rage to rage. Our hands shall we not rest, to bathe in our own breast, and shall thick in each land our wretched trophies stand, to tell posterity what mad impiety our stony stomachs led against the place are spread. Then still must heaven view the plagues that us pursue, and everywhere descry heaps of a scattered lie, making the stranger plains fat with our bleeding rains, proud that on them their grave so many legions have. And with our fleshes still, Neptune his fishes fill, and drunk with blood from blue, the sea take blushing hue, as juice of Tyrian shell, when clarified well, to wool of finest fields, a purple gloss it yields.
I'm just going to pause us there, because that seems to be the sort of end, well, not the end point of that point, but the sort of culmination before it moves slightly onto a different mode. Roman life of murder and death, isn't it? I'm particularly taken with making the stranger plains fat with our bleeding reins, proud that on them their grave so many legions heave.
Yes.
Well, I have. I mean, that's just... I'm not commenting on that. But yes, it's that sense. He's not a subtle... They're not subtle, are they?
Well, the Romans didn't particularly do
no,
subtle.
No, but in character terms, it's that sense of immediately we've got a marching...
Yeah, I mean,
it's very short lines.
It is a marching. I mean, you could almost do this as a marching song.
Yeah, I you know, it's a bit too long to do it that way, but you could definitely do it with that marching tempo.
But since the rule of Rome, to one man's hand is come, who governs without mate, her now united state, late jointly ruled by three, envying mutually. Whose triple yoke much woe on Latin's necks did throw. I hope the cause of Jar and of this bloody war and deadly discord gone by what we last have done, our banks shall cherish now the branchy pale-hued bough of olive palace praise instead of barren bays. And that his temple door, which bloody Mars before held open, now at last old Janus shall make fast, and rust the sword consume, and spoil the waving plume, the useless Morion shall on crook hang by the wall. At least if war return, it shall not here sojourn, to kill us with those arms were forged for others' harms, but have their points addressed against the Germans' breast, the Parthians' feigned flight, the Biscayne's martial might. Old memory doth there, painted on forehead where our fathers' praise thence torn, our triumphs' bays have worn. Thereby our matchless Rome, whilom of shepherds come, raised to this greatness stands, the queen of foreign lands, which now even seems to face the Hevians her glory's place, nought resting under skies that dare affront her eyes, so that she needs but fear the weapons Jove doth bear, who angry at one blow may her quite o'erthrow.
So they're quite partial.
Just a bit.
It'd be fair to say. So, you know, I think that line which is missing is actually really important in that copy. So, who governs without mates? So, it's this thing of. He's not encumbered with a missus, like that Cleopatra.
Is it without a wife, or is it, in fact, a reference back to the.
It may also be.
The triumvirate.
Yes, which they are mentioning also here. Again, we have all these intimations of what this army have just done. They've just gone out and brutally slaughtered the populace.
Well, it's standard.
Standard procedure. I mean, I don't think in real terms they were... I don't think... Did they really loot Alexandria? I don't know that the Roman... They did. I think they just simply marched in.
Well, they took over.
Yeah, they took over, but I don't think there was a mass slaughter. I think they simply just secured the queen. I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I do not recall that being part of the narrative. It's just such a step change as well, and then it just leads straight into Cleopatra's O Fortune, O Accursed Lot, and her general lamentations in the beginning of the next act.
Right.
So quite powerfully, we go from Caesar, Antony's dead, the soldiers marching in, everything is lost... And so I think in that sense, that impression of it petering out, I don't think it is.
Right, as I say, I only
yeah, no, I know,
skimmed the end of it.
The problem with these plays, and this is the reason why we do this, is that when you look at a play on the page, especially one with lots of long speeches, you think this isn't very dynamic, this isn't very interesting, and it's frequently not the case. With what we're here to disprove. Any other thoughts on?
No, I think we've given that a pretty good hack round.
And that was Act 4 as part of our prep for the proper recording. There may be time to throw in your 4 cents if you have any thoughts about it, and we might change our approach for the final version. Or not. Send thoughts, suggestions, clarifications, and passive-aggressive abuse either on our Patreon page by joining us or on Twitter at BeyondShakes, or you can email us at admin@beyondshakespeare.org.